This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Good morning and welcome to the Morning Beat. Thank you so much for joining us on this lovely Thursday. It is Therapy Thursdays. Mm-hmm. And in our next hour, we're going to be having a conversation about constant tardiness. Is there actually a scientific excuse for your tardiness? We've got a time management coach answering that question and others in Therapy Thursdays today.
Honey, for the sake of mine and Lisa's relationship, there better be an answer on why she's always late.
Honey, I feel you, because why do we both say honey to each other
honey,
that quickly?
Because our partners are late and we are early that and there's nothing. Mm. If I can hear you eat,
yep.
If I can hear you drink,
uh-huh.
And if you're late,
yep.
Ba, ba, ba.
Here's the thing. My partner looks fantastic in anything he wears. Literally anything.
Yeah, he's so fun.
He can wear a t-shirt and sweatpants every day of the week, and I actually prefer the sweatpants. You know what I mean?
Gray sweatpants?
Absolutely. But he still takes forever to get ready, and I don't know why we're always late for everything.
So listen, I'm Lisa's here hair is one Thursday. Inch long on the top of her head. I have a full horse's weave. I am out the door before listen. She is, 30 minutes
okay.
Before guaranteed.
I'll see you horse weave and one up you.
Great.
My
go
partner
off.
Has dreads, so they're already done, and even when he didn't have them, when he was bald-headed, he would still take more time to get ready than me. He had no hair. Doesn't matter the length
honestly,
of his hair.
Honestly, and he doesn't have to do like a full beat or anything.
He finds a way.
But he's so fine.
He's so fine.
And that we have to keep in mind.
He's so good looking.
Yeah, he is.
I'm a lucky, lucky guy.
And he's lucky too.
And I'm a lucky guy because my co-host is my best friend. How are you doing today?
I'm good, honey. I do want to talk about Emil for a second. I saw him at the gym the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And I went up and I grabbed his butt so hard.
Mm-hmm.
And he turned around like he was going to kill me. Thankfully, he realized it was just me.
He texted me immediately as if he had to admit it to me.
Oh, that I could squeeze his butt?
Yeah.
I sure did. I owned it. But then he's like, sorry, this guy's like creepy behind me. This guy, the way that he was staring at Emil. Mm-hmm. And I was like, do you want me to say something? Because he's literally got a 5-pound weight in his hand, slowly curling while he's staring at
not
your
a five
butt.
Pound weight.
Yeah, he wasn't even doing anything. He was just like, Emil.
Yeah, it's weird to go to the
gym. It grossed
with him.
Me out.
Yeah. Also,
also impressed.
To be fair, he's got a beautiful body. And I feel like he's either. Other black men like think that he's like, yeah, you're down. And a lot of white guys in West Hollywood, I think, fetishize black men too.
Right, yeah.
So I think he gets a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and then this, and he's just beautiful.
Well, I think my biggest concern was just like, why wasn't that guy looking at me?
Oh, well, that makes sense.
In a creepy way.
Mm-hmm. Especially
look
those little
me.
Tights that you wear all the time. little seam that goes right up the booty, and I don't know why. I don't understand why girls wear those. I'll never understand it, but you look cute in them.
I like to show off.
I know.
Quickly, you did something so fun last night.
I did. I went to the Lakers game. My first Lakers game ever.
Obsessed.
If you know me, you know that I'm from Ohio. I love my home state. I just don't like to go there very often. So anytime I get a chance to support somebody from Ohio here, LeBron James, the kid from Akron.
LeBron.
It was an incredible game. We had a private suite. It was awesome. Thank you to my friend Cornelia and to her job, the Grammys, for setting us
so
up for the night.
Cool.
It was fun. It was a good comeback. And Anthony Davis got injured. That was not good. But LeBron looked amazing. So It was a cool night.
Yes.
I'm a little tired right now. I'm sorry. I haven't really had my coffee, so
doesn't
I apologize.
Doesn't matter.
But how about you give us some news on the beat so I can take a little break, drink some coffee.
You got it, babe.
And settle in.
All right. The percent of U.S. adults who identify as something other than heterosexual has doubled over the last 10 years from 3.5% in 2012 to 7.1%, according to a new poll. Now, in the poll, it found that the increase is due to high LGBT self-identification, particularly as bisexual among Generation Z adults who are 18 to 25. It asked more than 12,000 U.S. adults how they identified during telephone interviews last year. It found that younger U.S. adults are much more likely to identify as LGBTQ than older generations. As the youngest Americans slowly outnumber and replace the oldest, the number of LGBTQ identifying adults will only increase, and likely at a much faster rate than past generations. So you got to keep that in mind. But
are you saying we did it? Like the gay agenda has worked?
We did it, Joe.
We did it, Joe.
We did it. All right. In other news, we'll be talking about this more in depth, but masks will soon be optional for many of those seeking out some Disney magic this year. Officials at Disneyland and Walt Disney World confirmed this week that their mask policies for fully vaccinated guests are being revised. As of Thursday, face coverings will be optional for visitors who have received their jabs across all four of Disney World's theme parks and in both outdoor and indoor locations. Mask protocols at California's Disneyland are receiving a similar update, with vaccinated visitors permitted to enter indoor attractions, eateries, and shops without masks from Thursday onward. Unvaccinated visitors to both the Florida and California resorts will be expected to wear a mask in all indoor settings. Officials, however, said they will not be checking vaccination records. We are going to go in depth with a physician.
So just the honor system.
Yeah, just they're like the water bottles at Runyon, where they're like, give a dollar and just be, right. It's an honor system.
I will say that the Lakers game last night was pretty much 50-50.
Really?
Half the people there did not have a mask on. And you're allowed to take it down to take a drink or food, but they just were
took
not
advantage
wearing them.
Of it.
Nobody down at the courtside seats, not a single person was wearing a mask. We weren't wearing our mask. We were in a private box with just a few people, but still, like, almost nobody was.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's get into weather. 61 in New York today, 72 in L.A., 63 in Vegas, and 73 in Palm Springs. Now, give us a vibe of the day, please.
Action is the real measure of intelligence. You could talk about it all day long, but take action.
Oh, I love that.
The Morning Beat with AJ and Michaela. Channel Q.
All right, so we've got somebody who needs some advice from us right now, Michaela Gordon. And I can't imagine, I don't know what advice you're going to give, because I can't imagine this has ever happened to you, but I'm still going to ask the question.
Go off.
Has anyone ever edited you out of a group photo?
They have not.
I can't imagine why they would, of course. Like, you're famous and you're gorgeous.
They have not, but I have edited somebody out of the photo, and it was not good.
Really? Why?
And I did it spitefully.
Well, because this person is asking, listen, my boyfriend's friends keep editing me out of their group photos consistently. Apparently, the friends do not like her. But why did you do it?
Okay, first of all, this is just shady. Like, if this person's man is letting them take their photo out and they're all smiling and happy and taking the one person out, I would be livid. I did it because, oh my God, we were just talking about toxic Italian culture, and here it comes again, rearing its ugly head. My cousin Tony got married like a couple years ago. Now, I'm the only granddaughter by blood. I was the only granddaughter for years. Then my uncle married his girlfriend. We got a new girl cousin in, and she came into the family. But there's like 8 boy cousins and me. And I'm like from my grandma's loins, okay? And I take that very seriously. So when we went to the wedding, they said, take a photo with all the grandkids and your grandma. So I did. I stood next to my grandma. She was in leopard. I was in pink. I'll show you this photo. And all my boy cousins stood around me. I was the only girl. I was tortured growing up. I deserve that position. So she gets in the photo. And I was like, no offense, but you're not a part of this family. Like, I said that in my mind. She's like, oh yeah, girl cousins only. And I was like, what is happening? So when I posted it, she was standing on the edge. I just cropped her out.
You didn't like erase her from it. You just like zoomed in enough so that she would not be in the photo.
Exactly.
Yeah, just like her hand is there.
Exactly. Not even her hand. There's one part of her body in that photo. So my cousin was livid. And she was like, I'm part of this family. That's not fair. I've been in this family for 8 years. And I was like, I don't care about anything you're saying right now. She's my grandma. And this is my family. I mean, it's sick. It's like not a normal thing to say. It is very toxic. But I remember it hurt her feelings so bad. And it hurt my aunt's feelings, my uncle's feelings, because he like married them in.
So what do you do in this situation though? Like what? So this person is upset because the boyfriend is it's not a family situation. So maybe a little bit, it could be less complicated or more complicated.
I think it's still complicated.
So AJ, what do you do? Though? Because here's the thing. These girls apparently don't like her, the girl group. They added her to a group text and then immediately deleted her. It was like an accident. And so there are a couple of questions that come to my mind. Is it her boyfriend's job to step in and say or do something?
Yes.
Because if they're going to be in a long-term relationship, you know, or does she just say, this is all too toxic for me, I got to get out?
I think it's the boyfriend's responsibility because it's his group of friends mm-hmm. to say, if you're not going to respect my girlfriend, we're not going to be able to come around.
Yeah, it's so real. And I found that early in my relationship, my partner is almost 10 years younger than me. And he had a group of friends that was much, much younger than me, of course. And a couple of them, I would say one of them, honestly. And she and I are great friends now. But those early years were rough.
Yeah.
Because she was also 22 or 23 or 24 at the time. And I was like, honey, you're like out here on your single life doing your like hot girl summer thing. And you're not a good influence on my partner because right. I'm in a relationship. And the other people that were in relationships got it. They respected it. But that I had to deal with that a little bit because like there's some boundaries being crossed there. And I feel like she's got to deal with these girls too, maybe with the help of her partner or whatever.
She should absolutely stand up for herself.
Yeah.
But I think it's important too to also understand like you can have a best friend and you guys can have everything in common and your best friend's partner may be somebody that you don't have anything in common
yeah.
with because they bring out different personality traits. Like accept that, know
yes.
that, but also respect on both sides still has to be shown.
That same girl I'm talking about who's in our wedding, you know her, love her, she's fantastic. She's grown a lot. We're a lot closer now. Her birthday's literally tomorrow. She's having a birthday dinner at like 10 or 11 o'clock tomorrow night. I did not get invited to, and I didn't think twice about it. I understand it.
Yeah.
I'm not her good friend. I'm fine with that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I think that's a very mature approach because I think that would be a fight for a lot of couples.
But you got to have the conversation.
Absolutely. All right. Coming up, this controversial television judge is calling out Kanye West, warning people why we need to stop glorifying his behavior and how it could really come out so dangerous for many people in relationships coming up next.
The Morning Beat with AJ Gibson and Michaela Gordon.
Channel Q.
Welcome back to The Morning Beat. Just a reminder, coming up in about 25 minutes, it's Therapy Thursdays. Are you always running late or is somebody you know always running late? There could be a scientific excuse for constant tardiness.
Ooh, there better be a good excuse because nothing makes me crazier.
I hear you. We've got a time management coach joining us to have that discussion in Therapy Thursdays in our next hour. Right now it's time for What's Poppin'. What do you have?
Okay, so this is really interesting. We've been covering a lot of Kanye West and his manic behavior when it comes to Kim Kardashian, Pete Davidson, who he's now calling Skeet Davidson. He's made a lot of threats. He's been posting a lot of private conversations with Kim Kardashian. And people are really posting like, if you don't love me like Kanye, I don't want it. You know, they've made memes. They've made jokes. We talked about it earlier this week.
I don't want that kind of love ever.
Hello. And we really said you cannot glorify this. Well, now Jameela Jamil, who's joined Let's Go There quite a few times, is saying, in her perspective, this is extremely dangerous. We cannot glorify this behavior.
Amen.
Because it's not funny. We are truly watching somebody dealing with mental health issues have a severe manic episode. But by doing so, he's putting now people in danger, his children's lives in danger. It's not funny to wish death or anything on Pete Davidson. And I think that's where we're coming to in this culture. I think for so long, I will speak for myself. I love being Italian. There's nothing more than that I love more. We are toxic AF. Housewives of Jersey is toxic. Jen Shaw and all of that is super toxic. But we always thought it was funny, so everyone got away with it. Toxic behavior isn't funny anymore because we're starting to see that people are getting killed. Just yesterday on Melrose, some girl was waiting for Jordans outside of a Foot Locker. People were in line. A fight broke out and she was stabbed to death. Mm. Like, people are not in their right minds anymore and it's not worth it. And so she's saying, begging her fans to learn something from Britney Spears' past struggles in the public eye and to stop enjoying and encouraging Kanye's behavior. She said that she knows he's asking for attention, but getting it will create unimaginable sadness for him and mostly his completely innocent kids later. Stop memeing this.
Well, and also, I love this. I love, love, love. She said, stop treating it like it's the Real Housewives because we've almost become numb.
That.
I know, but there was a quote from her that you said.
She wants to meme me.
Okay. So but it's so true that we've become numb to so many things nowadays because we watch it and there's not a differentiation anymore between what's fact and what's fiction when you watch TV shows because there's so much reality.
Well, and Lisa made this a point yesterday. She said Kim Kardashian, who's one of the most famous women in the world, who can afford the absolute best security, is saying she's terrified. What about the women who can't afford security?
Amen. And keep in mind, even though she is that famous and has that much security, she's also the one who got tied up, duct taped, and held at gunpoint and shoved into a bathtub in Paris just a few years ago while that security is working for her.
But
so even she's not safe. So if she's not safe,
imagine
nobody
these women
is.
In
yeah.
these communities that are already not having a lot of money.
Yep.
It's a lot, and I feel like I'm really grateful we're having this conversation.
And Kanye was just in a relationship. Like, what a male chauvinist pig to think that he can be with one woman and be talking to another woman this way, and he wants to have his cake and eat it too. Like,
well,
grow up.
And listen, like, the story goes that he wanted to go move to Wyoming. He wanted to be able to record. He wanted to be in a zen place to be an artist.
And get away from social media in Hollywood.
But Kim was like, I have four babies. I can't just go up and move with you wherever you want. And so he did. And there was a lot of allegations that he had been cheating on her while he was away, while she was taking care of the kids. Like, it goes very deep. And one thing about Kim, we haven't heard her side of the story because she's not talking. She's not dragging him. She's not saying anything, which shows so much class. But this is an important conversation that I feel like we have to continue having. Thank you to Jamila Jamil for bringing it up again. Now, coming up, could the reason people are late for things be because their brain just reads time differently? An expert joins us, and we'll have that conversation in 20 minutes.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Morning Beat with AJ Gibson and Michaela Gordon.
Channel Q.
We're about to turn it up, too, because it's Therapy Thursday, y'all. I love a good therapy
well,
session.
Well, yee-haw.
7:20 in the morning.
All right.
Well, this week we're talking about something that I think is really actually
the
very relatable to almost every human being on the entire planet, whether it's you or somebody you love. Is there actually a scientific excuse for your constant tardiness? We've got a time management coach answering that question in about 13 minutes on Therapy Thursdays. Super excited about that conversation. It's a frustrating thing when somebody you know is always late.
1,000%.
But maybe there's a reason. Maybe
you know,
there is.
Listen, I love my partner, Lisa, so much. And there are so many great things that she does. And she really, really does. And I would also like to say that she multitasks before we leave the house more than I do. She takes care of the dog. She does a lot more than I kind of necessarily need to do. But she's still late. And I don't know how to have that conversation.
I just want to tell you, as you drag yourself right now, I want to say, like, you touching up your hair, your brows, your makeup, eyelashes, and put it on a leopard coat.
Thank you.
Is also multitasking.
Oh, my God.
It's very different.
Sorry, my best friend.
She's probably taking the dogs out to use the restroom and things like that.
Yeah.
But you also multitask.
Oh, my God. That was the sweetest thing you've ever said to me.
Don't do that to yourself.
And to add the leopard coat in. It's like, you know,
I know you. What do you got for us in news on the beat?
All right, babe. The ACLU sued a school district in Indiana on Tuesday on behalf of a transgender student who is being denied the use of school bathrooms in line with his gender identity. The suit was filed on behalf of Jasper Wise Carver, an 18-year-old student senior, who was told school policy mandated students use the bathroom of the sex they were assigned at birth, regardless of a student's transition. School officials, the suit claims, told Wise Carver he could use a single occupancy restroom in the nurse's office. But when he asked later if he could use the men's restroom and locker room, the request was denied. As these hormonal and physical changes have progressed, and as Jasper had gotten more confident in asserting his identity as a man, he has become increasingly disturbed about having to use the nurse's restroom and not being able to use the men's restrooms like all the other boys and men in the school, the suit says. He feels that he is being singled out and that he is not accepted for who he is. The suit also claims that school officials have refused to update their administrative records to refer to Wise Carver using male pronouns and his preferred male name, resulting in frequent misgendering by substitute teachers. The ACLU said the school's policies violate the Equal Protection Clause. Wise Carver said on Tuesday that instead of school administration being supportive, administrators are making life more challenging for already vulnerable students. We've had this conversation so much, and it really is just so devastating. All right, let's get into a little bit of weather. It's going to be a high of 79 in Houston, a high of 73 in Palm Springs, a high of 57 in St. Louis, 73 in La Quinta, and 73 in Cathedral City. Now, do you mind giving us a vibe of the day?
Action is the real measure of intelligence. Listen, you want to show people how smart you are? Get to work.
Get to work.
Make your dreams come true.
Absolutely. All right, coming up, could the reason people are late for things be because their brain just reads time differently? A time expert joins us coming up in 7 minutes.
Good morning, Beat. Channel Q.
Now, listen, I know that it's easy to want to run away from your issues, especially something like therapy. It's not fun. We've been in therapy for a couple years. It is time for another round, though, of Therapy Thursdays. And today, we're actually asking the question, is there a scientific reason, an excuse for your constant tardiness? So we're now joined by a time management coach. Please welcome to the program, Rochelle Esip. Rochelle, thank you for being here. First question, though, everybody wants to know, is there actually an excuse? Is there a reason that some people are more tardy than others?
Well, I think there's actually a couple of reasons. The first reason is that we just get distracted. You know, we set up an appointment and then we get caught up in something else. And then all of a sudden, oh, we're running late or behind. Second, I think there's a tendency to think that arriving on time is something that magically happens on its own. But that's not true because we need to set up and schedule our appointments. So that's another thing.
It takes
work.
And
then third, I think it's that we just haven't prioritized the appointment or the meeting. You know, arriving on time requires us to stop, think, and then take action. So I think it's a couple of things, actually, that contributes to lateness.
Well, I would like to say on a very personal level, I love to be on time. I'm sometimes even an hour early, which is also not right, but I am. My partner runs late. And where we find ourselves is she will be running late. I will say it's time to go. Let's go, because it's my biggest pet peeve. She then feels like she's rushing, even though we clearly are very late. We get into a fight before the event, and then we get to the event. Now, is there a different communication skill that you should be having with people that run late? Because also, if it's something that isn't necessarily their fault and more just a place where we need to be more educated, how do you have that conversation?
Right. Well, I think having the conversation in the first place is key. To actually sit down and communicate with the other person, not when you're in a rush, when you have, you know, ample time to discuss things about what's the most comfortable or optimal way for them to prepare for the appointment. You know, some people are ready to, you know, pick up and go. Other people need more time to prepare either mentally or physically, you know, if it's gathering their belongings. So to have that conversation and to come to an agreement, you know, when it comes to that meeting that you're both attending, you know, what works for both people, and then also to be realistic about the real world, because it takes time to travel, you know, in a car, in a train, in a bus, you know, by plane. So I think it's, you know, that two-prong approach, you know, having that conversation with the other person, understanding where they're coming from, and then also building in reality in real life.
Well, there's
honest about that.
There's a story that came out in the Business Insider like 20 years ago. I mean, so this information's been out there for a while, that there are basically two types of people when it comes to like tardiness, right? And I used to be really tardy. Now as I've gotten older, I'm much, much more punctual. But growing up, my grandpa used to always say, I'd rather be an hour early than a minute late. Mm-hmm. And that was already always drilled into us as kids. And I always thought that was insane, because in my mind, I understand being on time. But nobody, like, an hour of my time is not more important or less important or more than a minute of other person's time. Is that what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
An hour of my time is not worth a minute of somebody else's time. But this study says that there are two types, type A and type B. Type A individuals are more likely to be punctual. Type B are more laid back. And they say, actually, that type A individuals, a minute, 60 seconds, in their experience is about 58 seconds. So they're kind of right on time, whereas type B felt a minute pass in 77 seconds. So they just feel time differently. Like, what do you think about that? Is it possible that maybe our partners are just experiencing time different than we are?
I think that could very well be a possibility. We all experience time differently. You know, when we're having fun with our friends and family, time just flies by. Mm. But if we're doing a task that we don't want to do, chores, taxes, paying bills, it's, you know, time goes by slowly, right?
Yeah.
So it really is all, you know, a perception, you know, of that individual and then also the task that is involved. So, you know, when it comes to that, again, it's really being clear about where you fall, you know, in that range.
Yeah.
You know, are you more of the I have to be punctual person, or I'm arriving late, but I would like to be more punctual, and then finding that sweet spot of, you know, okay, this is how I feel, but, you know, it doesn't have to be that way for, let's say, you know, every appointment or meeting.
Yeah, there's a number of reasons. You know, some people are like the type that need to feel like everything's perfect before they walk out the door, right? They're not going to leave unless every single hair is in place.
It's like an OCD thing.
And they might be the only person actually noticing it. It's so funny because literally yesterday, Michaela, my boss, I got compliments on my hair and it was kind of messy. And I was like, oh, I didn't do it today. And they're like, no, it looks really great. And I find that every time I leave my home a little bit messy, I actually get more compliments. In my brain, though, I think that everything needs to be perfect before I go anywhere. But being late actually costs the United States, according to a recent study, the U.S. loses $90 billion each year as a result of people being late. So if money doesn't motivate people,
Lord,
what else do you think can motivate somebody to get on time and get on a schedule?
Well, I think, you know, besides money, just respect and dealing with people, you know, in the world. Because when we're in that mindset of, okay, everything has to be ready before I leave, you know, you're really only thinking about yourself, and you're doing a disservice to the people that you're supposed to be meeting with, you know. You've been scheduling it, you've been, you know, texting, emailing, calling, you put in all this work, and then you make that split decision that no, wait a minute. Right now, my stuff is more important than spending time.
Ooh, that part right there just hit deep.
You know,
okay.
And one thing that I'll just add that's been helpful to me is I've found that I've been a people pleaser who says yes to everyone and everything. And I will notice that I have completely overlapped plans. And so something that I've had to do is really set boundaries and say, like, no, I'm not going to be able to make it, because it ended up making people upset. But that wasn't my intention. I was just very overwhelmed. So I do think that speaking to you was really great. And I do think that it is an unintentional thing when people are late. But you got to fix it, because you're costing the world $99 billion a year.
Oh, just $90 billion.
Oh, sorry. Not that extra $9
billion.
Yeah, no, just
$90
excellent.
Billion.
thank you so much, Rochelle, for joining us, time management coach and productivity consultant. We hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you very much. It was great to be on the show.
And thanks for not being late for the conversation. All right, coming up, how to have a conversation with a person in our community who doesn't support trans people. My mother's calling in 7 minutes.
The Morning Beat with AJ Gibson and Michaela Gordon. Channel Q.
You're listening to The Morning Beat. If you missed our conversation in Therapy Thursdays about constant tardiness, you missed a good one, so go download the Odyssey app at wearechannelq.com, and you can listen to our show as a podcast all day, every day. So let's talk about this.
Okay.
Once again, our trans community not only being not supported, but targeted. And the headline of this article in Queerty caught our eyes. This openly gay GOP candidate hopes to bring his unique brand of self-loathing to city council. Okay, why did my voice
crack? I don't know. It was emotional.
Very emotional. Christopher Aaron Felker, he's an openly gay candidate currently running for Burlington City Council in Burlington, Vermont, which sounds exciting, but not so much, because in addition to being a diehard conservative who has spoken out against the Equality Act, Felker has a rich history of attacking trans people on Twitter. What do you do in these situations? This is so tricky to me, because it's kind of like having conversations with log cabin Republicans.
Yeah.
I want to be respectful. And if you're voting one way or the other, because I don't at all think that all Democrats are great and they're the answer to all of our problems. That's not how I feel at all. I'm a liberal and I'm a progressive, but that doesn't even mean that the Democratic Party always necessarily represents all of my, like, hopes and dreams.
Right.
I just know that the Republican Party as it stands right now is trash. It's a dumpster fire led by Donald Trump and sort of hatred. Uh-huh. And that's just where most of that party falls. Now, there are those groups that were really fighting the Lincoln Project. Those people were really sort of like fighting back for a long time, and they still are. But then when we have conversations with, like, log cabin Republicans, for instance. We used to have one of the leaders of Log Cabin Republicans in California on our show a lot, and it felt like beating my head up against a brick wall.
Well,
so how do you have these conversations when somebody like an openly gay candidate is also transphobic and super conservative? Like, what do you do? How do you wrap your brain around that?
I will make it a personal story for myself. So my mother is a lesbian. That's how she identifies. She has been with men, obviously, but she prefers to be with women. She was very, very much shamed for her sexuality, starting at a very young age. But I remember a few years ago, while we were still talking, this was probably about 8 years ago, I was doing a lot of work with trans men and trans women. And I was even doing work with men who were still very much married, but they wanted to go to a safe space to be able to dress up like a woman, put lipstick on, and then take it off and go back to their wives. And, you know, there's so many layers to our community and to what make people feel safe and what they want. And I remember my mother was so, so judgmental towards our trans community and was so vile that I had to step out of the room. And I was thinking in my head, like, you're a lesbian woman with a lesbian daughter. Why wouldn't you support everybody in our community? But I think what's interesting with my mom, she comes from like a lot of ego, but I think that people will relate to this personality trait. I think she was treated to be so ashamed of her own sexuality that there was a superiority complex when it comes to trans people. Like, she's then the top tier of our community as a lesbian.
Yes.
So there's still this idea that, like, well, I'm still better than them.
Yep.
Like, heterosexuals have been like, well, you're trash. And then she's like, well, and I say her, meaning a lot of people.
Yeah.
Because I think that really it's just ego and still wanting to be important and still wanting to be special and still being superior. And you don't feel like that in the heterosexual community. And like this guy, he wants so badly to just be normal, just relate. I'm gay, but look at me. I'm like every other person. That you really attack the people that are at the lowest bottom.
You start
of
to acclimate.
Totem pole.
You try to acclimate. And I just got to say this. Sometimes I think you cut yourself down a little bit because you think you're like just the funny, witty one on our show, and like I'm like the thoughtful, introspective one. Couldn't be further from the truth. You're so thoughtful, and like your assessment is so spot on.
That's
because
so sweet.
It's so true, though, and you see it in so many instances culturally in this country. Right? There's a major divide between Asian Americans, like families of immigrants, and Black Americans, mm-hmm. and how they acclimated to our country. Also, how they were brought to our country is very different stories too. Or Latinx Americans, and sometimes like Asian Americans tend to look down on African Americans because they say, "Well, you didn't acclimate fast enough, and we are successful. We're doctors, and we're scientists, and you're still struggling for equal rights, right?"
Right.
But then Black people look back at them and they say, "Well, you guys acclimated and gave up your culture too quickly, and caved to the white man." So there's it happens a lot, and it happens in our community all the time.
Well, and I think with the trans people, you and I have talked about this. Mm-hmm. We've shared this. You know, trans people are truly living in their truth.
Yes.
Like they are absolutely,
you know, courageous. How courageous
you must
be.
In every way, living in their truth. Mm-hmm. And being in our community, I think that you're like, I'm a lesbian, but you're also very passing. Or you're a white gay man, you're very passing. To live a trans life, you're not, like, there's no passing. You've literally had to say, I am changing the gender to what I feel most comfortable at. The amount of courage, but the amount of authenticity that takes,
mm-hmm.
that triggers so much in people. It's the same as when I see a beautiful girl living her dreams.
Yep.
And for one moment, I'll go, oh, but, okay.
You
like,
judge
okay.
her because hurt people and they judge people. This guy tweeted, some of his tweets are so problematic, I can't read the entire thing because it's too much. But he said, you also seem to think that a cheap wig and a fist full of hormones makes you a woman. You're wrong there, too. Facts don't care about your feelings. Nobody cares how you identify. No lesbian has a penis. No gay man has a vagina. Homosexuals exist. Trans people aren't homosexuals. And he didn't say the word trans people. He said a really derogatory word instead.
Okay.
And he says that it's because of his Catholic upbringing.
Okay,
this is how he was taught, and God doesn't make mistakes.
Christopher, here's what I'm going to tell you, honey. From a cis woman, I absolutely have so much weave in my hair right now that it could be a wig. And the hormones that I take for polycystic ovarian syndrome is metformin and spironolactone. You could literally Google it. It's exactly what they give trans women when they're transitioning. So to say that we're not on hormones, like I'm a cis woman,
mm-hmm.
that's to help me be able to have a baby and regulate my hormones. Like the arguments don't make sense. It's just not true.
Well, and it's similar to, it's called the Southern Strategy. And if you look at historically what happened in the United States and the Deep South in the 1970s and how that whole entire region used to be highly Democratic, and they flipped it. Because what they did is they started to make white people in the South afraid of Black people. And they said, listen, you're dead broke. The Republican Party does not support you in any way, shape, or form. We're the party of the elites, actually. But they didn't tell them that. They said, listen, it might be bad for you, but you're still better than these people.
Right.
Speaking of minorities. And they were able to divide them. And that's why you look to this day, broke white people across the country vote Republican. And for somebody who's vile like Donald Trump, who is a multimillionaire allegedly, because even in their brokenness, they still think, well, at least I'm better than them.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just a horrendous way to
look at
humans. But
then when those broken down white people go into very successful white people, they're quickly reminded that they are not
belong.
The same.
They vote against their own self-interest. Yes.
The cycle is vicious. It's a superiority
and this is
complex.
A self-hating gay man who thinks he's better than trans people who could not be more wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, coming up, famous psychic from the 90s has now been outed as a lesbian and apparently an actress. Did you waste your money on her? Find out who it is and what's popping.
Good Morning Beat, Channel Q.
This story hits a little close to home for Michaela Gordon in particular. What's popping?
Okay, listen to me. When I was 9 years old, I was sitting in my room on Balzar Avenue, and I was watching the television in between Judge
Balzar.
Judy. Yeah, in between Judge Judy, and there was a psychic that came on. And her name was Miss Cleo.
She was an icon.
And she was an icon. She knew everything. Miss Cleo literally knew everything. Her performance was riveting. Take a listen to some of her conversations.
You have questions. I have the answers.
Who asked you to go out of town? The stupid young one or the married one?
The married one.
That's what I thought. Don't go. You hear me?
If you want him to believe that it's over, then you got to stop accepting the booty calls at 2 a.m. in the morning. You understand?
Yeah.
Don't stop accepting the 2 a.m. booty calls.
First of all, she would read people for filth. And my 9-year-old heart attempted to call multiple times until it got to the credit card portion where I was like, oh, I don't have a credit card and I can't tell my mom. I'm trying to talk to Miss Cleo. So I guess I just won't
that
say anything.
That was me when I would call, 1-900 numbers.
Yeah, we didn't have credit cards.
Once I get the credit card, I'm like, okay, I got to hang up.
However, brace yourself because the television psychic infomercial queen is the latest to get the Hollywood treatment. Miss Cleo, whose real name is Yori Del Harris, rose to her international fame, but it was truly all an act. A lawsuit in 2000 against the Psychic Readers Network, the parent company behind Miss Cleo's iconic infomercials, exposed her as Los Angeles-born Yori Harris, a lesbian actress and sometime playwright. Now, the exposure caused so much damage to her career, and she actually died of cancer in 2016. And there's a new documentary on all of it. Deadline is reporting, and they're going to go in on her story.
She was only 53 when she passed away.
Yeah, but also crazy that she was a part of the community, crazy that it was all an act. And I know that a lot of people are like, well, duh, she was a psychic. But not remember during this time, this was about 20 years ago. Like, we were not exposed to reality television or so much of that. This is when things were like still somewhat believable, but they're going to drag her.
She reminds me of my fiance's aunts, all of his aunts in New York. They're all Jamaican, and she was Jamaican. The way that she gets hyped up, it's all too relatable. It's
yeah,
surreal.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm going to watch it, but if you wasted your money on Miss Cleo, I hope you found the light. I hope you found where you were supposed to be going. You're allergic to this story. You're
I
sick
am
of it.
So allergic to Miss Cleo,
you're
apparently.
Sick of it. All right, we'll move on then. Coming up, a new sex education class has been introduced, but parents are livid. Do you think it's beneficial or harmful for kids to learn about sex? We'll discuss in the next hour.
B. Channel Q.
Why exactly are parents so afraid of their children learning about things like sex in school?
Because if we normalize it for these kids, then they won't feel guilty about being gay, which stresses people out.
It's very uniquely American. If you've ever traveled to Europe or other countries, you realize that this like sort of hang-up we have about our bodies and about sexuality and nudity is very, very uniquely American. We're having that conversation coming up in about 13 minutes here on The Morning Beat. Why? Because we love sex. And we're body positive here on the show. Michaela, stop looking at me like that. I know what you're thinking. I look good. I my hair's cute today.
And you know why? Because we love sex.
Well, we do.
We do.
We're happy, healthy, functioning adults. All three of us in this room are in relationships. We're allowed to love sex.
Yes. I love. I just love how you said that. I thought it was really great.
Do you
want to
watch me transition from talking about how much I love sex to news on the beat?
Yeah.
And very serious topics?
Yeah, let's do it.
Well, you just watched it. It's time for news on the beat.
Let's talk about masks. Not masks on masks, just face masks.
Oh, yeah.
Masks will soon be optional for many of those seeking out some Disney magic this year. Officials at Disneyland and Walt Disney World confirmed this week that their mask policies for fully vaccinated guests are being revised. As of Thursday, face coverings will be optional for visitors who have received their jabs across all four of Disney World's theme parks and in both outdoor and indoor locations. Mask protocols at California's Disneyland are receiving a similar update, with vaccinated visitors permitted to enter indoor attractions, eateries, and shops without masks from Thursday onward. Unvaccinated visitors to both the Florida and California resorts will be expected to wear a mask in all indoor settings. Officials, however, have said they will not be checking vaccination records. Face coverings will still be required for all guests on all park transportation systems in both Disney World and Disneyland, including monorails, buses, and parking trams. Disney's announcement follows similar updates at other popular theme parks, including Universal Studios. The news, however, drew a mixed response on social media. We're going to have a deep conversation in our 9 o'clock hour, 12 o'clock Eastern with Dr. Laura Rush to talk about how you can continue feeling safe if people are walking around with no masks, what you need to know, because it's going to get crazy. We talked yesterday about Coachella and Stagecoach, how they're just not going to check for anything.
I went to a Lakers game last night, and half the people there had zero mask on. The entire front row, all the floor seats, nobody wore them.
That's crazy.
At all. But, like, also, I've been so diehard masked for 2 years. And I've been mask for 20 years, but diehard mask for 2 years. And I'm at the point now, too, where I'm like, listen, I got both my shots. I got my booster. I'm doing everything. Numbers are down. I'm tired of it.
Absolutely. I hear that.
And it logically doesn't make a lot of sense anymore.
I hear it. Mm-hmm. All right. In other news, the percent of U.S. adults who identify as something other than heterosexual has doubled over the last 10 years from 3.5% in 2012 to 7.1%. Now, Gallup found that the increase is due to high LGBT self-identification, particularly as bisexual among Generation Z adults who are 18 to 25. It asked more than 12,000 U.S. adults how they identified during telephone interviews last year. It found that younger U.S. adults are much more likely to identify as LGBTQ than older generations, as the youngest Americans slowly outnumber and replace the oldest. Gallup predicts the number of LGBTQ identifying adults will only increase, and likely at a much faster rate than past generations. All right, let's get into a little bit of weather. It's going to be a high of 54 in Buffalo with a lot of rain.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Sounded like there's a question there.
There wasn't. It was a full statement. 81 in Miami. It's going to be 73 in Palm Springs, 63 in Vegas, and 72 in Los Angeles, 72 in La Quinta. Now give us a vibe of the day.
Action is the real measure of intelligence.
Yes.
You might be smart, but if you're not taking action, nobody's going to know it.
Absolutely.
Get to work.
All right, coming up, a new sex education class has been introduced in schools, but parents are livid. Do you think it's beneficial or harmful to kids to learn about sex? Coming up in 7 minutes.
The Morning Beat with AJ and Michaela, Channel Q.
Okay, Michaela, did you at any point in your life get the sex talk from your parents?
Absolutely not.
Ooh, from who then? Anybody?
Nobody. I was told that if I had sex, I would immediately get pregnant and that I would ruin my life and I would never be able to be a singer. So don't.
Mm.
And so I literally did not have sex with anybody until I was almost 20. And for the time that I started my period at 11, I gave myself like 16 pregnancy tests. That is not a joke. I was like, if I had a bad thought, I was like, oh my God, I'm pregnant. Because also I was raised in Catholic school, and I was like, if it could happen to Mary, it could happen to me.
Well, parents,
she didn't have sex with Joseph, and look at her.
Look at her. Well, parents
bad
now.
Bad example, actually, as I say it out loud.
Terrible. Okay. Parents at Columbia Grammar and Preparatory School, it's a super high-end school, $56,000 a year for students to go there. It's a high school, right? At prep school. They're really upset because just last year they had a porn literacy workshop. And so they've hired a new teacher. They fired that teacher and they hired a new sex education consultant to come in and teach some sessions to their juniors, right? Well, now they're upset because this teacher is also of the, sort of the same thought process as the previous one, saying, we need to talk to our teenagers. We need to talk to them about these things because it's real. They're probably having sex right now. And if they're not, they're going to very soon. And if they're not, they're curious, right? And the best way to get ahead of this is to give them all the information so they can make informed choices as adults.
Yeah.
When I was in Europe this summer, it was shocking to me the way, because I've never really paid attention. I've been to Europe before, but in Portugal and Spain, the way that they approach sex and sexuality and body and everything else is so very different than how we do here in the United States. I mean, I was walking around going to like museums and there's like a coffee shop and next door there's like a tantric massage parlor where they do full on like the, like to completion, happy endings as part of like the procedure.
Yeah.
And it's considered to be like an art form and a form of physical release and spiritual release, right? And here in the United States, absolutely not. Never could happen. No way, no how. It's just so fascinating to me that in the United States, I feel like the way that we avoid talking about sex with our children sets us up for a lifetime of then unpacking things and having to get to know ourselves as sexual beings as adults. And I think it's really problematic.
Well, I think it's problematic for so many reasons. And I agree with everything you said. I know that in Sweden, they have sex on television from the very beginning to normalize what that looks like for children. Because look, you always want what you can't have. If you're told no, you can't have it, there are people that will say, I want it and I want a lot of it, especially if it's deemed as bad. And I will just say that in my own sex, in my own exploration as a woman, not even so much sexually, there has been, this is going to sound a little woo-woo LA, but I really had to come into like my own divine feminine energy, because I feel like it's just something that we don't talk about as, you know, our masculine energy, as our feminine energy, as our sexual energy. So much of that is like rooted into just who we are and how we accept ourselves and how we like ourselves. And if you've been shamed sexually, or if you've been shamed for having any kind of emotions, you really do push it all down. And the effects are so great later on in life, and undoing all of the things that we've been taught is expensive with time, with finances, and it would just be so much easier to normalize it as a little kid.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because some of the things they're still teaching our kids in the school system, public schools right now in 2022, things like, you know, if you have an unplanned pregnancy, it means you're going to be scarred for life. The rest of your life is going to be ruined. While according to Planned Parenthood, though, 45% of all pregnancies are not planned, actually. Right. But we're telling these poor kids, like, it's going to ruin your entire life. They are also taught there's no such thing as male birth control, which is also not true. I mean, condoms are readily accessible everywhere you go. And I think oftentimes the onus is put on young women.
Well, I mean, look, my cousin, oh God, I know he doesn't listen. He's a very big Republican. But he's been married to my cousin-in-law for like 11 years, and they have one child together. She's Buddhist. He is extreme Catholic. And she said, listen, I don't want to be pregnant. So if we're going to be intimate, you have to wear a condom. He said, I'm not wearing a condom in the Catholic Church. If we get pregnant, we just get pregnant, and that's a blessing.
That's
and
so weird
now
to me.
They don't even have sex. They live in a marriage where she doesn't want to have sex with him because she doesn't want to get pregnant with him. And he won't do it without a condom. So their marriage is so lifeless and they're so miserable together. And then I say, so is that what you want too? Like, is that what the Catholic Church wants to do? Which is we're all miserable? I mean, we've been taught religiously that sex is only to procreate. And it's just such a lie. It's so not true. And like you said, with the tantric massages, it's an art form. There's a whole thing to do about how creative and how much of an outlet sex is.
Of course, and I think that we get so lost in like the minutia of it all, and we start like picking our battles and we retreat to our corners. But most sex ed advocates actually say that it's super important to ensure for a comprehensive sexual education to begin early as preschool, talking to kids about these things. Because what happens is if you let these kids go through preschool, kindergarten, elementary, and then you don't start talking to them until they're like sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade. By that point, they've already been taught it's dirty and bad.
Yeah.
And you have to then try to unlearn, and they're conflicted. They're confused.
Well, a friend of mine is raising two young boys, and she said, we don't say private parts because private has a word that's like dirty. We do let our children know, like, you can't just whip it out, but it's normal. Like, the conversations that she has with her 2 and 3-year-olds even made me uncomfortable at one point, because I was like, oh, that's weird. But
why is my computer ringing?
It's God.
Sorry about that. Somebody called my computer.
Well, it's God. He's saying, let's normalize this conversation.
But
I'm here.
Absolutely. He's letting us know.
God is gay.
Remember the movie Kindergarten Cop with Arnold Schwarzenegger? Remember that movie?
Yeah, I love that movie.
And the kid says, my mom said boys have penises, girls have vaginas.
Yeah.
That's something that as a kid, I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they said that. We also said private parts.
Yeah.
That's how we talked about it, though.
Totally.
And it makes you feel a kind of way, whether you realize it or not. Nobody's saying, let's start like showing porn to kindergartners and teach them how.
No.
But having a healthy understanding of what your body is capable of and the emotions and the feelings you're going to feel throughout your lifetime.
Well, and also, I was, and I'll end it on this. I was watching a conversation with Oprah, and a mother said, look, it feels good. When you touch your genitals, it feels good. I'm not going to shame my child because it feels good. I'm not going to say, like, here's everything, but we're going to have the conversation.
Sure.
So that when they get older, especially men, they're not going out and raping women. And women don't feel like they need to use their bodies as, you know, something that they don't want to use it as. It's just that simple.
Yep.
So it's an important conversation that we need to continue having, and I'm so happy that we are. Now, coming up, I'm so deep in this conversation, I lost my cheese. We love judging people. We really do here. But what if people are getting paid to judge you? Find out what we're talking about when it comes to getting a ride, coming up next.
The Morning Beat with AJ and Michaela, Channel Q.
How often do you get in an Uber, Michaela?
Well, you know, before the pandemic, I used Uber quite a bit.
Oh, we had places to go.
I don't use an Uber now. I tend to drive a lot just because of the COVID of it all. But I did get into an Uber for the first time in a long time on Saturday. I used it to get to a gig. But it was pretty normal.
Right.
Pretty okay.
It's interesting because you get an Uber and you can see the ratings that you're out of 5 stars that your driver has. Right.
Right.
And you also have a rating as a user. Here's the difference, though. Up until now, the driver knows when you rate them. They know what rating you gave them. You can leave a review or whatever. And it could affect their income. I try to be as kind as possible because I always think to myself, listen, even if my driver wasn't that great, unless they're dangerous. If they're dangerous, I'm leaving them 1 star.
Of course.
I want people to be safe. But if they're maybe just not that pleasant, there's something maybe a little bit, their car's a little dated, I still try to give them 5 stars just because I'm like, I can't imagine what it's like to be driving an Uber for a living and that's it. Yeah. Right? And so I feel for that person. And no shade, but like, I don't know that most people are like, their lifelong dream is to be a driver, right? So I try to be kind and think like, listen, this is what they're doing for a living. They're putting food on the table, roof over their heads. Great. Now Uber has changed their policy, though, so that you can now see how each driver rates you. Because normally you just see a cumulative, like I get a 4.9 rating overall from drivers. Now you get to see how they rated you individually. How do you feel about that?
I feel fine about it. I feel like I'm a really great passenger. I feel like I don't talk. I feel like I'm on my phone doing things. I mind my own business. And I feel like, unfortunately, in the state of the world, Uber drivers, like you said, most of these people are taking this job as an extra source of income.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of driving. It's a lot of wear and tear on their own personal cars. And I think that people do not handle themselves well. I mean, we can go back to the story of those 3 girls in Vegas who were extremely physical with the driver because he asked them to wear their masks.
Mm.
Ubers have become quite political. They weren't like that in 2019. And it doesn't even matter if they've got their phone showing that they're taking footage of the whole incident. If they act inappropriate, if they start beating them up, they still have the chance to ride in an Uber. And I think it's for the safety of the Uber drivers. Is it a...
It's essentially like what would happen to somebody on a plane. They maybe get put on a no-fly list. They can't get on that airline again because they've been rated essentially by the plane for being
unruly. Listen, we did this to ourselves, okay? I don't want to handle your alcohol well.
So I hear that. I disagree with this. I don't think that the Uber driver should be rating their users. And here's why. In my brain, I look at it this way. I'm paying the Uber driver for a service. They're not paying me. So if I'm paying for a service, I get to judge what kind of service I've received and let other people know, hey, is this business, this service worth your time and, more importantly, your money, right? I give a server a tip based on what sort of service I get. And me, generally, I give 20% unless you're really, really, really bad. If you're really bad, the lowest you're going to get from me is still probably 15 to 18%, even if you're terrible. But I already get judged enough places in my life. Every time I look on any social media platform, somebody's judging me somewhere, right? It's a lot. If I'm paying somebody to drive me, I'm not paying them to also judge me and tell me what they think about me.
Well,
now, I think it's different if, so for your scenario, for those 3 girls, I think the Uber driver has every right to file a complaint and to share that information with Uber and ban those girls. That's fine. But day in, day out, just getting judged by a driver for how I sat in the back. Because you never know. A driver could very easily just be like, okay, well, they didn't really talk. They were rude. Well, I didn't talk because I didn't get in your car to make a friend. I got in your car to get a ride to the airport.
Angel's advocate, that's what people can say about the driver. And
the difference
truth
is, though, you're paying them. They're not paying for a service. You are.
Yeah, but it's kind of like the restaurant situation. Like, you're going to the restaurant and you've got to pay because you have to pay to eat the food. No one told you that you had to go eat out at a restaurant. You pay what you pay, and then you tip the server. Uber, they're not making the $100 that you're spending on Uber. They're not making the $20 that you spend on Uber. They make a tiny percentage to the point where they've actually had to add a tip so that they can make money. So you're paying for, essentially, Uber as a service. They receive the tip, and if you just want to be an a-hole that day, they don't receive it. And oftentimes, because you also don't have to use them as a service.
But also, what's happening there, again, we've had this discussion on the show too, is that Uber is a multi-jillion dollar corporation who could pay their employees more.
But they're
Once again, what happens, though, is now you're putting the client, the person in the back seat, and the employee, the person in the front seat. You're making us mad at each other when you're seeing things like Jeff Bezos, for instance. There's a report that he made $19 billion in a single day recently.
Right.
Like, that's insane. Insane. And we're like nickel and diming ourselves to death. And now we're going to get judged. I think it just causes more division. And
well,
I don't like that.
I hear that. I do. But Uber's not stepping up. And I think that it's become just such a safety issue. I think that people can show up in that Uber extremely intoxicated. Some of the stories that I've heard that people have dealt with as Uber drivers puts them in such an unsafe situation. I know one story I heard. A man was so wasted and he pleasured himself in the back seat while this woman was driving. And that's something that should be said. That's something that should be judged. You know, it's just where we're at. So,
also, I just realized, and I've never looked at this in my entire life, my Uber rating, 4.83. Is that good? It's pretty good, right?
Yeah, are you acting like a normal person?
I think so.
Then you're fine, honey.
I love it now.
We love it now. All right, coming up, a former supermodel opens up about disfiguration from a procedure and why she almost lost her life after trying to cut the fat out of her life. Coming up next.
The Morning Beat with AJ Gibson and Michaela Gordon.
Channel Q.
You're listening to The Morning Beat. It's time for another round of What's Poppin'. Michaela, what do you got?
All right, this story is devastating. Linda Evangelista was a supermodel, honey. She was one of the most beautiful models, and she was even quoted by a drag queen star on Drag Race. When complimenting another drag queen to Valentina, they said, Linda Evangelista. But Linda is now coming out revealing that she's permanently deformed from a cool sculpting procedure. She said, I loved being up on the catwalk. Now I dread running into somebody I know, the 56-year-old said. I can't live like this anymore in hiding and in shame. I just couldn't live in this pain any longer, and I'm willing to speak. Now, she has taken notably some years away from the spotlight. It wasn't until 2021 that she went public with her reason for doing so. She shared her story, and she said that she was brutally disfigured by Zeltic's cool sculpting procedure, which is really important. I've done cool sculpting. Like, I know people that have done cool sculpting, and if it's not done well, what does happen? She said that it was August 2015 through February 2016 when she had undergone 7 sessions and noticed within months that the procedure meant to get rid of fat was instead expanding and hardening those areas instead. She said, I tried to fix it myself, thinking I was doing something wrong. I was dieting, over exercising. I got to where I wasn't eating at all. I thought I was losing my mind. But she's saying that no more. Like, she cannot do this alone. She doesn't know what she's going to do, but she's really coming out and asking for help. And I think it's amazing for so many reasons. People do sculpting all the time, and they have to know that it doesn't turn out even when you're a supermodel, even when you have the money to do so. Also, gotta be kinder to our models. I mean, let them age gracefully.
Yeah.
You cannot continue holding them into the 90s spotlight that they used to be. It's too much pressure.
Cool sculpting basically freezes the fat and tries to get rid of it that way. It's a non-invasive sort of approach, and she's had to have liposuction done twice since then. Full transparency, I had liposuction done a couple of weeks ago. I did a treatment here in Beverly Hills. It's called Air Sculpt, and it's a little bit less invasive than traditional liposuction. But the downtime for that has been rough. I've been in a lot of pain for the last 3 weeks, and so cool sculpting is like an alternative to that. Well, she's had to get lipo multiple times since then. I understand like the appreciation for like a tone, healthy looking body and for wanting to feel and look your best. I get that. I understand it. I do think though that it's sad that we put so much pressure on women in particular to age a certain way that she's had to go through this. It's been years.
It's been years for her.
Well,
it's also very painful. She said the bulges are protrusions and they're hard. If I walk without a girdle and a dress, I will have chafing to the point of almost bleeding because it's not like soft fat rubbing. It's like hard fat rubbing. Like it's painful for her.
It's real. So personally, I can say that like my skin right now in certain areas, it's slowly healing and the nerves are reconnecting. But your skin feels hard right afterwards, and you have to get, I've been getting lymphatic drainage and things like that to take care of it, but the skin actually hardens, and if you don't treat it properly afterwards, wear the compression garments and go for walks and get lymphatic massages, it can harden and can create basically these like pockets of fat that are like rock solid.
Yeah.
And that's what happened to her. And it's just, it's so sad.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, coming up, masks are starting to come off at events, but is it giving you anxiety? We are joined with a physician on how to stay safe as the world tries to get back to normal. Coming up in the next hour.
Good Morning Beat, Channel Q.
Coming up this hour on The Morning Beat, it's time for another round of What the Health. We're going to be joined today by Dr. Laura Rush, who is a specialist, a physician and HIV specialist, talking to us about the current state of the pandemic. You know, masks are starting to come off at large events. Disneyland, Coachella, among others, are saying it's time to revisit our masking strategy. Are we comfortable with that? Are we ready for it? We're asking her those questions and more in What the Health, coming up in 13 minutes from right now. Right now, though, it is time for news on the beat. Michaela, what do you have?
All right, babe. Well, after a gunman killed 49 people at the Pulse nightclub in 2016, breaking the heart of this city, Orlando created some of the most LGBTQ-friendly public schools in the country. The Orange County District began hosting an annual Gay Pride Month, complete with supportive notes on campus marquees and bulletin boards. School administrators made sure every high school and middle school had a gay-straight alliance, and students were supported if they wanted to use the pronouns that matched their gender identity. But amid increasingly bitter debate over school curriculum and textbooks, Orlando area educators find themselves in a pitched battle with GOP leaders and increasingly emboldened conservative activists over how to teach and support LGBTQ students. Florida's Republican-controlled legislature is considering a measure that would ban discussions of sexual orientation or gender identity with elementary students in public schools. Parents would also be able to sue districts that expose their children to lessons that are not age appropriate. All right, in other news, New Zealand has banned the controversial practice of conversion therapy by a near unanimous vote, with the bill receiving more public input than any other piece of legislation in the country's history. The government received 107,000 public submissions on the bill, which was introduced last year following an election promise by Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern and passed on Tuesday night with 112 votes to 8. Conversion therapy is a widely discredited practice that aims to forcibly change a person's sexual orientation, gender identity, or gender expression by way of talk therapy, hypnosis, electric shocks, and in some cases, exorcism. Under the new law, those who use these practices on anyone under the age of 18 or anyone with impaired decision-making capacity will face a sentence of up to 3 years imprisonment. Conversion practices that cause serious harm are also now banned, irrespective of age, and attract a sentence of up to 5 years imprisonment. And that's on Amen, honey. Okay, let's get into weather. It's going to be 63 in New York today, 72 in LA, 63 in Vegas, 73 in Palm Springs, 72 in La Quinta, and 72 in Cathedral City. Now, do you mind giving us a vibe of the day, please?
I could definitely do that. Action.
What is that smile on your face? What's happening over there?
We're about 3 minutes early coming out of the segment. I was just looking at the clock.
I know, but I saw this cute little grin on your face. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know if you saw something that was cute.
No, just looking at the clock.
Okay, great. Good.
Action is the real measure of intelligence.
That's true, though.
Yes. We can all convince ourselves that we're the smartest person in the world. We have the greatest ideas, blah, 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 blah. If you don't have the courage to take action, your ideas are going to die with you. Like, so what's the point? What's the point of living in fear? Just go for it.
You know what's so funny, too? It's just important to be honest. I will say taking action. I've been working out a lot, but I have, like, pretty bad knee injuries just from playing soccer. I had to have surgery on my left knee. They've been bothering me. And I don't know if you're familiar with this book by Louise L. Hay called, Fix Your Life. something, I can't remember, but it basically breaks down all ailments that you may have, from arthritis to belly issues to knee issues. And it says what's going on that you're experiencing that sort of pain.
Yeah.
And in the knees, sometimes, or the feet, it says you have a fear of moving forward. For mine right now, I'm being prideful and stubborn and not going with the flow of life and moving forward. Mm. And it doesn't matter what you believe, but everything can mean a little something.
It's all connected.
And I looked at it and just kind of assessed where I'm at emotionally and spiritually. And I was like, God, that's true. Okay, let me like think differently. But having all of those points of knowledge can really help you so that you can just move forward. You can put into action what you're trying to do.
I had this discussion with my friend last night who went to the Lakers game with her, and she's having some stomach issues. She's seeing a lot of doctors, and she's finally meeting with somebody who is a psychologist.
Wow.
Who talks to her about how your mind actually is impacting your gut health.
It's
and everything
true.
Else, and how interconnected your entire body, your entire system is. And it seems like voodoo, seems like hokey to some people, but it's so true. It's absolutely so true.
And look, it can be hokey to everybody, but the book is called Heal Your Body by Louise L. Hay. And for what it's worth, it helps me. It helps people.
Sure.
It gives us just a little bit more insight into what's going on.
Love it.
All right. Coming up, speaking of health and what's going on, we are joined with an expert to navigate as events start happening where we don't need to wear our masks. How do we deal with our anxiety? She joins us in 7 minutes.
The Morning Beat with AJ Gibson and Michaela Gordon. Channel Q.
Welcome back to the Morning Beat and what the health. Now, as you know, Disneyland and Coachella, Stagecoach, festivals and amusement parks and other large gatherings are starting to ease up on the restrictions for COVID-19. Many are saying now you don't have to wear a mask. Coachella and Stagecoach are saying you don't even have to show a positive or a negative test or vaccination record to attend this year. Many of us are left wondering, you know, how do we navigate this new world? What are we comfortable with? Is it time to move on from masks completely? So here joining us to have that conversation is a physician, HIV specialist, journalist, speaker, and writer, Dr. Laura Rush. Dr. Laura, how should we collectively feel about taking the mask off and getting back to some sort of normalcy? And is there a wrong way or a right way to feel about this?
You know, it's a complicated question when we're looking at, you know, going to big outdoor events that we just saw with the Super Bowl or Coachella coming up in a couple of months. Using, you know, a bit of caution when you're making that decision. If you're immune compromised or if you are not vaccinated, you may want to consider bringing a mask and keeping it with you. It is outdoor, so you will be a little bit safer because it'll be more of an airflow. The thing with Coachella is that most people are going to be wearing masks anyway because it's dusty and windy. So people are wearing masks in general there. So, you know, you're always wearing one. And you know, I'll be at Coachella this year, but I'll be masked up as always. It's a tough question in that you have to use good judgment. If you're going to be inside a room and you're the only one wearing a mask, then make sure you're wearing a good mask, an N95 mask, if you are immune compromised. Unfortunately, as we're coming up into the spring and summer, we really see the Omicron wave is really dissipating. It's really dropping down. And that's going to help. On top of, you know, increased vaccination rates, all of these things should play into us feeling a little bit safer. Some epidemiologists are a little fed up and aggravated right now that they're saying, okay, that's it. Just you can take off masks now, as if, you know, we've hit some sort of set point. And we haven't just yet. So I think we still need to be using some caution. Here in Palm Springs, we're still wearing masks at indoor restaurants and facilities. But I always say, you know, look and see what the experts are doing. If you see your physician wearing a mask, then, you know, it's offering some modicum of protection.
Well, Dr. Laura, I think that I will speak for myself and I will speak for people that I've had conversations with. I'm vaccinated. People that I know and love have been vaccinated, boosted twice, and they're really feeling like I have done absolutely everything that I could, and I would like to start attending events and going places and going to the gym without the mask because it is uncomfortable and I'm ready to move on. And it seems that the only people who are now at risk are the people who have just chosen not to get vaccinated. I understand that it's important that even the non-vaxxed don't get exposed because they're taking up hospital beds that could be used for people that have been vaccinated. But at what point can we really say, like, not to each their own, we don't want to be irresponsible, but to each their own, like, we've done everything.
We are doing everything we can, and this is the level of frustration is very high with, you know, with everybody in the medical community, because I feel that, you know, people who have been vaccinated are probably done. You know, it's we're going to get a slow trickle. We're not going to see big waves of people coming in to get vaccinated right now for COVID. So it's going to be a very slow increase at this point going forward. And you're right. It's frustrating that those of us who are vaccinated wearing masks are doing everything we can. We would like to get on with life. And those who are at risk are still the unvaccinated and not wearing masks in appropriate areas. And they do have to take responsibility for their own health and safety. But right now, yes, they do confer a problem to the medical community, the establishment, with overloading hospitals. Fortunately, the hospitals are getting better. They're still busy. People are still getting sick. And, you know, I have to remind people, people are still dying of COVID. And what people tend to also not realize is that, well, even if you get a mild infection, you know, someone could still end up with long COVID. Mm. So by, you know, being careless for just a couple of minutes.
I'm hearing is if you are unvaccinated or immune compromised, the recommendation remains wear a mask indoors and large outdoor gatherings. But for those of us who have taken every precaution and we're fully vaccinated and boosted and whatnot, use some common sense. If you're going to be in a close confined area, you know, I was at a Lakers game last night, and I'll be honest, I didn't expect it, but half the people there were not wearing masks indoors, even though that is the policy, right? I was in a private box with just a small group of people. I took mine off. I felt comfortable with that decision. I'm fully boosted. But it's time that I think that we all put our big boy pants on, our big girl pants on, and act like adults and do what's best. How do you see this playing out? Do you see this? And I know that, you know, we've heard a lot of different reports on how this pandemic ends. Does it ever end, or does it become endemic and it's just part of our daily lives? Is it now going to actually be like the flu in the long run?
Yes, this is endemic at this point. So, you know, Omicron, maybe not so much, but COVID-19, that particular virus is with us now, and we're going to be getting vaccines for this for a long time to come, just like the flu. Mm. You know, the flu, we've been dealing with this since 1918, so well over 100 years. I don't know how long Delta or COVID-19 will last. I'm sorry. But, yeah, it's endemic now, and we are going to have to learn to live with it. And, you know, wearing masks, It's a smart thing to do in any event. You know, you see your physicians and nurses wearing masks and dental hygienists wearing masks, and that's how we protect ourselves, even when we're not in the middle of a pandemic. So it's not that big of a deal to wear one or to keep them on hand if you need them.
Well, certain cultures, I travel a lot to Asia, and in Asian cultures, oftentimes everybody in the airport is wearing a mask anyways, way before the pandemic. So it's not a terrible idea
no.
if you're going to be around large groups of people, just to keep yourself a little safer.
But I will say, on a personal note, listen, I just love people. And I think that it says so much when somebody smiles and their whole face lights up and their eyes light up. And I can't tell you how many people I've side-eyed because I thought that they were giving me side-eye underneath their mask. And I was like, what's up, bitch? And they were like laughing. And I was like, oh, sorry. I just miss it. I miss people's faces. I miss seeing them laugh and giggle, but we do want to stay safe. Dr. Laura Rush, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. You guys have a great morning. Tell me something
good. I'd like to tell you about Lorraine Hansberry. Now, Hansberry was an activist and playwright best known for her groundbreaking play, A Raisin in the Sun.
Oh.
About a struggling black family on Chicago's South Side. Now, Hansberry became the first black playwright and youngest American to win a New York Critics Circle Award. A Raisin in the Sun opened in New York's city's Ethel Barrymore Theater in 1959. Becoming the first play written by an African-American woman to be produced on Broadway. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
Now, prior to this, Hansberry, who never publicly acknowledged that she was a lesbian, joined lesbian rights group Daughters of Bilitis and contributed letters about feminism and homophobia to its magazine, The Ladder. Hansberry didn't officially come out until nearly a half a century after her death, when in 2014 her estate unsealed diaries and other writings in which she reveals her sexuality. She died at the age of 34. Pancreatic cancer. What an accomplished life at 34, though, to go.
Absolutely.
You're 34. You're very much a lesbian, out and proud.
Yes, I am.
Because of people like her.
Absolutely.
Paving the way.
Yeah, I am. I love her.
Love it.
Okay, this story is amazing. Now, when my papa was starting to pass...
Oh, no, I'm so sorry. I almost jumped in and said, Papa, can you hear me?
Papa, can you hear me?
And it was a story about
me?
Your papa almost passing.
He would like
so I'm
it.
So sorry. Okay, good.
He would
okay,
like
good.
It. Okay, he likes when we sing songs for him. When he was in the midst of passing, he went and stayed at a senior citizen's home because it was just too hard for my grandma and my family. And I think a lot of people understand that because hospitals can be really scary. But imagine if you're just a little baby. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be in a hospital room without your family. So a pediatric intensive care unit in Austin, Texas... is trying to make these little kids' days a little bit brighter. And so one of the clinical nurse coordinators is a really talented artist. And so she started drawing because it was just very therapeutic for her. But now she's begun to draw pictures on the windows of her patients' rooms using paint and chalk markers. And she's transformed the normally drab hospital windows into vibrant canvases, including Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Minions from Despicable Me, Paw Patrol puppies, and Sesame Street characters. And there's nothing cuter than that, she said. I hope for my patients when they get a chance to see me draw, because I work at nights when they are sometimes asleep. It inspires them to be creative and fun, or at least remind them that even in the hospital, there can be a little bit of fun. And I think it's so sweet. I mean, little kids lose their mind. My niece, who's 5, is obsessed with Paw Patrol. Obsessed. So imagine being a little kid, you see that on your window. It's so sweet.
It's adorable.
I just love that.
My niece is like Doc McStuffins.
Oh,
that's their big one.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yes. They're so cute. Well, that is the end of our show. We do want to thank all of our guests, including Dr. Laura Rush, talking about is a one-way mask okay? If you did miss any of our conversations, we do turn it into a podcast. You can head on over to wearechannelq.com. We have a great show for you tomorrow. It's Friday. Love to hear it.
Also, we've got 3 great hours of music coming up right now, so don't go anywhere.
Don't go anywhere. Just keep vibing, jamming, and wait till Let's Go There comes on, and then go away.
Then
don't go,
there.
There. Don't go there. Just leave.
No support them.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day. Bye.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This holiday, BMW has reunited 3 members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.